In a world where you're not supposed to be living for the weekend, we're still glad it's Friday. Welcome to the Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, Brad, can you believe it? We are in the middle of May 2017. This year is flying by. I mean, it's like living in the future every single day. How you doing, man?
I'm doing quite well. Yeah, everything's going well. It is hard to believe how fast the year is flying. We have our pool is actually opening up for the girls' swim team next week, which seems crazy, but time is flying.
Yeah, and I just found out that I have Memorial Day off, so I don't have to worry about Justin teasing me on that day that I have to be at work, because I'm going to be at home and just relaxing. Maybe going to the pool, just like you.
Nice. Sounds like a plan.
By the way, that's Justin Rudigood. You know, guys, how much he teases all of us that are stuck at work. Anytime we have to be at work during the week, the man is just flaunting his financial independence. So it is my personal goal to get to FI as quickly as possible, just so I can say, shove it, man. I'm there too. So guys, this past week, we were talking about the true cost of car ownership. And specifically, we were looking at, you know, how you can win inside the margins. Brad and I are in the camp that most of us at the end of the day, especially while we're not FI, are going to have a car. Now, you can certainly not do that. You could certainly bike to work or come up with a moped or use some other means of public transportation. And if you can get away with that, great. But for the majority of us, probably 90%+ of us that are listening to this show, we recognize that we're going to have at least a car in the family. And so then our own particular perspective on that is, how do you win inside that construct? And we kind of came to the conclusion, based on the math that we looked at, that if you pick a car that's already taken the depreciation hit, a 5-year or 10-year-old car that's a gas sipper, of the different scenarios that we put to you guys, that is going to be your best case scenario. It's going to cost you the least amount of money. And what I came away with is, even in a perfect world scenario where you do everything right, the car is still going to cost you about $2,000 a year minimum, which is a lot of money.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I mean, I know personally, I don't drive that many miles each year, and my car is sitting there and you have to insure it. You have to deal with the depreciation. I mean, it definitely adds up. So even for people who think, oh, my car doesn't cost all that much, it, as Jonathan showed, it really does. And I think one thing we've tried to get across through the first 30 odd episodes here at Choose FI is that the structural expenses are what really move the needle on your path to FI. So whereas many people out there, you might be saying, hey, I've already bought this house that is a little more than I probably should have had I known about FI earlier. But and you know, that might be frustrating, and you might not move up and sell the house tomorrow. But with your car, that's something that you can actually change fairly readily. So to me, like, this is absolute essential pillar of FI here, is dealing with your structural expense of your car. So I think everybody needs to pay attention to this and go back and listen to that episode. You know, especially how much your car is costing you over 20 or 40 years if you're constantly buying new cars, or, as I said, managing the payments and leasing a car or something like that. So this is a big dollar figure.
We had some pretty cool feedback on this episode. Matt sent us a comment, and he, in the subject line, he put FI teacher nerd alert. But this was a really cool email. He said, I made a compound interest problem out of this episode, and he used it in his algebra class today. Then him and his class, they discussed the math behind why buying a brand new car is not a smart decision. So many people buy a new car right out of college, but investing the amount of a monthly car payment for 5 years turns into a staggering number when compounded over a 30-year working career, even after you stop after 5 years. That new car is cool right now, but is it worth not having $200,000 later? And he said, thanks for the information, guys. Teenagers love the idea of FI, but no one teaches it to them. How cool is that, man, that there is one class in America that got exposed to this math at the age of, you know, 15 to 18. And they're going to get a chance to do something with it. And, you know, when you really show them what the long-term numbers look like, there's a solid chance that a few of them will make that slightly slightly better choice based on that math. And it will just set them up for success down the road, especially if they compound that knowledge with some of the additional stuff that we talk about.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, talk about second generation FIRE, right? Matt is making an entire class of second generation FIRE people. So that is really super cool. And what I always say to people is, and yeah, I've thought about this a lot. I remember my first job, I worked at one of the big four accounting firms, and some of my colleagues who were, you know, 22, 23 year old kids at that point, you know, we were just getting started, but we had a decent starting salary. A couple of them actually bought BMWs. And I remember at the time thinking just how utterly stupid that was. But now looking back and thinking about the compounded cost of that insanely stupid decision, I mean, that's, as Matt said, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's just to look cool, right? Like, what 22-year-old kid needs a $30,000+ BMW? It's just absolutely asinine. So if you get amazing teachers like Matt teaching you at 15, maybe you don't make that decision. And maybe you're at FI at 35 just because of a couple of decisions, right? This car, house hacking, like Coach Carson mentioned to us. I mean, those two things alone could essentially get you to FI by 35, right?
Yeah. And to me, that's the mass appeal of this show of, you know, when you're listening to these episodes and you're thinking, oh, it's too late for me to apply this to myself. You're going to have kids. And how cool is it that you can mentor your kids? If I knew then what I know now, teach your kids. If you're a teacher, teach your kids. You know, this stuff will change their life. And honestly, that single class that Matt had the other day, that could be the one thing that they remember 20 years from now. I mean, Brad, do you remember anything that you learned in high school? Like, do you really remember anything that you learned in high school? I would remember that.
Yeah, I would remember that. And no, I remember just about nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And how often is that the case, guys? I mean, high school is important. There's a lot of good stuff that's being taught in high school, but we are failing our kids when it comes to some of the most important things. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why we can't spend more time doing what Matt did and just giving them the tools they need to ensure their financial freedom and that of their future families and future generations. So this stuff is important and it applies to everybody. I think that's what we see more and more. Everybody needs a baseline of financial education and they're just not getting it. So just making a few changes and the information that we're giving to our kids can have a massive impact on our next generation. All right, so I stumbled around a couple other mentions on the web on Saverosity Indie Finance. He's been listening to a few of our episodes and he occasionally has some commentary on them. And I thought this one was pretty interesting. I think it kind of rounds out our conversation. He basically posed the question, is your car a cost center or a profit center? And I'm going to just quote just a small portion of this. He said, financial independence enthusiasts typically frame the question of car ownership something like this. Is it better to pay more in rent to live within walking or biking distance of work or pay less in rent but be forced to own a car in order to get to work? In other words, you can tally up your total expenses for housing and car ownership under both circumstances, and the one with a lower total cost is your best bet for achieving financial independence, leaving as it does more residual income to invest. The problem with this framing is that it treats your cost as variables but your income is fixed. And indeed, this is how most people go through life given a job. What is the most cost-effective way to build your life around that job? I think this is a really interesting perspective and good insight on his part. I think that in much of the FI community, that the argument is just, should you commute to work in your car or should you arrange your life to be in a position to be very close to your job where you can bike and make that extra money? And I think his position in that your income is variable and your income is extremely important. In some cases, driving to work will allow you to get a much higher income, which is the engine that gets you to FI. And we're going to be talking about that actually this upcoming week on Monday with ESI. We're going to do an article called Career Hacking, How to Supercharge Your Career. But I think that that's a very interesting perspective. Now, in this particular episode on Monday, we were actually focusing on assuming that you're just going to have a car. That's what you're going to do. How do you win inside that construct? But I think that's really insightful, don't you, Brad?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I actually want to take just a step back and talk about the bicycling for a second, because I think this is one of those things, like what we are all about here is people taking action and people understanding how easy this whole FI lifestyle is, because as we've said repeatedly, we A, are not perfect, and B, we're just regular guys living a regular middle class lifestyle, and you don't have to be that frugal weirdo who everybody kind of laughs at, right? Like, and to me, the bicycling is the one aspect of like the mainstream FI, if you will, that just isn't mainstream at all. And I think it's one of those things that could potentially turn people off, honestly, because it's just not realistic. If Pete, Mr. Money Mustache, listens to this, I can basically hear him face punching me now. But right? But yeah. But it, realistically, 35-year-old suburban dad is just not going to ride his bike to work down. You know, I have 45-mile-per-hour roads that I live off of. I'm just not taking my life into my hands because other people are driving their cars past me. Like, it's just not happening, honestly. And I know this might sound a little extreme for me, but that is just not something that's going to happen. And I guarantee you, 98% of people listening to this are saying, yeah, I'm not riding my bike to work. So if that's like a central tenet of FI, well, I'm not in.
We need to make biking a pillar of FI? Maybe we'll let the competition ride up for next year. It definitely didn't make the cut this year, though.
No, I don't want it. It absolutely should not. I'm arguing the exact opposite.
Oh, I hear you, man. I hear you.
Right? Like, and I think some people would put it as a pillar of FI. Now, do I think it's fantastic exercise? And if you can get to work safely and easily, you know, yes, I absolutely do. But is it one of those things that if we make it a pillar of FI, like, are people going to be turned off? I legitimately think they will.
Oh, so, yeah, for sure.
So, and I think that's why you and I have gone out of our way to basically say, like, that's just not going to work for our lifestyle. Now, it might work for Pete. It might work for Jeremy from Go Curry Cracker. And that's great. You know, more power to him. But that is not something that's essential. So I agree with this article on Saveracity. And it's a very interesting point of view that you should do what you can to maximize. Now, I would also throw in that your life happiness is important. And I think anybody who listens to the show regularly knows that happiness is something that I'm trying to maximize in my life. To me, that I don't want to be in a car for 45 minutes a day. That would lower my quality of life significantly. So I understand the point of living fairly close to work, because like when I did have to commute to work, it was an 8-minute drive. It was 4.5 miles, and that was fantastic. So I definitely appreciate the concept of moving somewhat close to work. But again, the bicycling is just a bridge too far for me personally.
You know what? That actually sounds too close, because in the perfect environment, you would need enough time to listen to one podcast episode, right? That's got to be built into your day. That is like, I account for one podcast per commute. So I get 2 podcast episodes per day. So I think like the perfect balance would be you'd have a commute, but yeah, it can't be an hour. That's now you have a minimum 10-hour to 12-hour days, especially if you live in one of these urban areas where you've got a lot of traffic as well. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, that sounds tough.
I'm going to challenge you with something, though. I think that biking to me sounds horribly inconvenient if you've got to be somewhere at a certain time. And okay, I'm going to get some blowback on that because people are going to say, well, traffic, everything else. But for me, that sounds really inconvenient, as I have to be a professional, shirt tie, have to be at work. But on the flip side of that, what if I were actually in Pete's shoes or Jeremy's shoes, where I actually was FI, and I'm picking locations that I've designed the life I want, and this location is perfect for me? Would a bike make my life more fun or enjoyable then? I could actually, for their specific scenario, and if I were in a position post-FI where I've completely designed my life the way I want it, so I rented in the exact spot that I wanted, I've got all the amenities in the exact locations that I want, and it's a very biking friendly area, and I don't have to be at a job at a certain time because I've, again, designed that life, I could totally see that. Or an electric bike, I know Pete talks about that, or urban moped, any of those locations. Like, I'm not selling that to the person right now. I'm just saying, for me, on post-FI, would I go down potentially to one car and then maybe have a bike? I mean, maybe, just because they've gotten me excited about the idea, and I'm not even particularly passionate about it, but it clearly brings a lot of joy to Pete's life. Would I be willing to try that as a thought experiment for 6 months? Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. I'm always up for trying anything, and that does sound certainly better than being in a car all the time. So yeah, I'm definitely with you in that perfect world, FI designed life.
Dude, building that perfect world. It's coming. It's coming, man. We're building it right now.
I like it.
This was from Orange Lightning, and they got excited about it a couple weeks ago, and they found these things called cargo bikes. Have you all ever heard of these? Brad, did you see the picture?
I did not, actually.
All right, I'm going to send you the link for it. This thing is freaking cool. So they apparently get a lot of attention for it. In fact, at one point, they'd even created a website about it. We'll put a link to it in the show note. But these are like totally utilitarian bikes. So it's got room for their 2 kids on it. It's got storage on the back. I mean, it just looks fun. It looks like fun with 2 wheels. And so we'll put a link to that in the show notes if y'all want to see something a little bit different that somebody else has figured out. And these are not frugal bikes. I mean, these are $500 plus bikes, but I mean, you can tell that they get a lot of enjoyment out of these things. And I haven't seen anybody else talking about it. So, you know, $500 in the spectrum compared to maybe a car that's costing you $7,000 a year is not that much money. So definitely, if y'all are interested in what somebody else is doing, go check out. We'll have a link to that in the show notes so you can see it, and very cool stuff. All right, guys, so we actually got a voicemail from Rebecca, and she has a question about her car, and she left it as a voicemail, so we're going to get a chance to play it for you guys.
Hey guys, my name is Rebecca. I live in Charlottesville, so not too far from you. I've really enjoyed listening to the podcast. I have a question about cars for your upcoming The True Cost of Car Ownership podcast episode. I bought a 2010 Honda CR-V this past fall for about $13,000, maybe a little more with taxes and fees. I currently owe just under $6,000 on that. The interest rate is pretty low. It's somewhere around 2%, but I'm trying to pay it off early. I'm a single person, and I'm wondering about getting a different car, selling that one, and instead getting maybe a 2009 Honda Fit, which would be under $7,000, probably closer to $6,000 ideally. Wondering about the cost, what you suggest there, and the CR-V just feels like a lot of car for just one person. So I'd love your advice and opinion. I'm not sure if it's a good idea to turn around so quickly and get a new car, but I feel like the Fit would be maybe a better fit for my lifestyle. I'm not sure about the cost there. Thanks so much.
All right, Brad. Well, I feel like this is definitely a doable question to at least talk about, even if we can't necessarily give the perfect answer. We're going to try and give you a little bit of an answer. I mean, this one is probably just in the back of my mind as I'm thinking this through, it's probably going to net even. It sounds like you already made a pretty decent choice with your first selection. I don't know when you bought it, but if you just bought it within the last couple of years, I think you said your initial purchase price was $13,000 and it was a slightly older vehicle, which was, you know, if, as you listen to our episode, you'll come to the conclusion that's a pretty good choice right out the gate. It's also not a large SUV. It's a smaller crossover SUV. So you're already getting slightly better gas mileage as well, although you could certainly do better with the Honda Fit. So my initial thoughts are, you're always going to lose on cars. You are going to save some money immediately just by getting better gas mileage in the Honda Fit. I think the information you would need to know in order to really flesh this out are, if you went online and you took a look at the Blue Book value, what could you sell your CR-V for if you sold it via private seller? The cool thing is, you know, because you're being able to do this from a good place, not from an emergency place, you can make sure you get a good buy on both ends of the equation. And so it's kind of inside the margins. I think probably either of those is a decent vehicle. There's not like a really a bad choice here. But the big thing is, you essentially want to get to whatever car you end up settling on, you want to drive this for a long period of time. And because you have a Honda, it's going to be very easy to repair either way. But if you can follow Brad's advice and just hold this thing for at least 15 years, and I think honestly, you're probably going to net even if you switch it over to the Fit. But if you can hold this thing for at least 15 years before you end up going with your next vehicle, you are just going to come out miles ahead.
Yeah, as Jonathan said, I think the one piece of missing information is the actual Blue Book value of the CR-V. So that would maybe, and you know, honestly, we could have looked that up after we got that voicemail. But that to me is the missing piece of information, because I guess what I would take a step back and just say, Rebecca clearly doesn't think that the CR-V is perfect for her lifestyle at this point. So that might be the deciding factor for me, that maybe the Fit makes a little more sense. I would imagine, so if she bought the CR-V for $13,000 this past fall, and it was a 2010, so the vast majority of the depreciation would have already happened. So it's not like she bought a 2017 or 2016 CR-V, and then it would have been probably a calamitous amount of depreciation. But I imagine she can probably sell this thing for, I don't know, $10,000?
Yeah, and actually, Brad, while you were talking about that, I went ahead and just took a second and pulled up the Kelley Blue Book. Now, we don't have all the information on the model and all the features and the condition, but just assuming it's the baseline and good condition, it looks like private party selling, you should be able to get somewhere between $8,000 and $9,000. So, frankly, what did you say? You owe six on this vehicle currently, and you're looking at getting a Honda Fit that's going to cost about the same as what you owe. If you ended up selling this thing, you're probably going, I would say you're easily going to make minimum $7,000 all the way up to right around $9,000, which might even give you a little bit of equity back to decrease the cost of what you owe. And you could apply that towards the Fit, and you could easily come out of this with a Fit. If that's going to make your lifestyle a little bit easier, the gas mileage is certainly going to be better. And as soon as you get this thing paid off, then you can decrease your insurance down to just liability. And between both those two things, you will have dramatically decreased your total cost of car ownership, and then just drive that Fit for the next 15 years as a little Econo hatchback gas sipper. And yeah, you're going to win. How does that sound, Brad?
Yeah, that sounds very good. I think that's good advice. It definitely comes down to lifestyle. So I think if she wants to move towards the fit, then I think it makes some financial sense. So I would definitely be on board with that decision for sure.
You know, historically in my past, the things that motivated me to get cars was more how the car looked, I think. You know, just in my pre-fi life, things that motivate you are just totally different. You know, you're trying to keep up with the Joneses, you're trying to keep up with your friends, you know, whatever those influences may be. But in our community, in the community that we're building, our goal is to get to financial independence. And you start looking at vehicles as utilitarian pieces that will allow you to get there faster. And in that construct, it makes sense to get a vehicle like the Honda Fit. That may be the perfect vehicle, right? You're going to have more storage, super great gas mileage. I think that probably at some point we will determine that that is the favorite vehicle of the FI community.
All right. So I think this was a great discussion about cars to add to our True Cost of Car Ownership podcast that came out on Monday. And just to put the finishing touches on this, I basically just want to say, don't buy a new car. I think that, right, Jonathan, that's our biggest piece of advice. I know in my own life, my parents actually just recently bought a new car. And this was like a double stake in my heart. I swear they not only did they buy a new car, like a $30,000 car, but they actually sold their investments. Sold some like of their mutual funds to buy this stupid car. Like that, it just frustrated me. As you can imagine, like my head basically wanted to explode.
And you were recording this podcast at that point. You hadn't gotten quite as far down the road, but I know you had already started this podcast when that had happened.
Yes.
That is awesome.
So yeah, that has been waiting to come out for quite some time. It's like
accountant rage.
Yeah. Talk about don't piss off the accountant. But unfortunately, your family is sometimes the people who listen least. So,
right. You're never a prophet in your hometown for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, at least my brother listens to me. So he's well down the path to FI. So it's good stuff. But yeah, just in summation, it's don't buy a new car. That's just about the stupidest thing you could possibly do. And as we've discussed, these are real dollars, especially compounded over 20 or 40 years in investing lifetime. This makes a huge difference on the tune of $500,000 to $1 million. So please be smart when it comes to cars. You're not trying to impress anybody. Nobody cares if you have some stupid BMW or Mercedes-Benz. Like, just buy a reasonable used car and drive it forever. That is my best possible advice.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, guys. So we have some huge news. So you guys know that we have been for a while trying to set up this place where we could start doing these case studies one at a time for people that are in different financial situations, and we could bring in these in-house experts. I mean, get excited about this with me, guys. We have got right now for real estate, Coach Carson. There is honestly in this world, there's nobody that I would get more excited about to talk to about real estate and have him coach me through the process than Coach Carson. It's built into the name. And then for accountant, there is probably nobody that gets me more excited about just accountancy in general and using the tax code to win than Wealthy Accountant. He's on board. We got an episode coming up with them very soon. And guys, here's my third one. So we got two huge announcements today, and I cannot stress to you how big this is. We have two more in-house experts that are going to be fleshing this out. So, you know, ChooseFI is becoming the hub of the financial independence community, and it is a weekly gathering place where your voice is heard around the nation. But even more than that, it is becoming the home to some of the premier experts in our space that may not have their own individual podcast, but they have decided that they're willing to come on and share their knowledge with us as it builds a story. And so it's ongoing continuity, information that builds on itself. You're not going to get this anywhere else. I mean, this is going to be huge. And so we have two more names to add to this list. The first one is Alan Donegan from Pop-Up Business School out of the UK. This guy has been crushing it. And I cannot wait for Brad to tell you a little bit more about what he's been doing. And then the other one that is going to have such an impact on our case study this month is Big Earn from Early Retirement Now. I'll be honest with you guys. The idea of me being the one to explain sequence of returns to you, you know, especially as you're going to be taking this information in your 50s and then just retiring with it, that is a lot of responsibility. And frankly, it scared me. And frankly, it scared Brad, but we wanted to do it. So we went out and we got probably the best guy in the country. I'm serious, literally the best guy in the country to come on and be an in-house expert for sequence of returns. Big Earn's going to come on and be our in-house expert for that. And he's going to actually be walking us through this information one step at a time so that you can take it and make a plan with it, actually use it. And you can get the best information in this space and apply it to your life, especially if you're ready to pull the trigger right now. Brad, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Jonathan, I am so excited about this. This is what we have planned from the very beginning of ChooseFi is not making you and I the center of this. We just help facilitate this conversation between the community of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people and the real experts in this space. And the fact that these four people so far have decided to basically be our in-house experts and be there when we need them and when we receive questions, it is just, it's so huge. And it just says so much about what we're doing here. And more importantly, what this community has shown, how active you guys are. It really is a testament to you. So thank you all very, very much. And just real quick. So Alan sent us this email and Jonathan and I were basically doing backflips. I mean, he brainstormed 9 different ideas of all these things to do for the next year or multiple years. So he's talking about coaching one of our listeners to build a second stream of income or business, live workshops that we can record, even us coming to England and doing a workshop. I mean, that was pretty darn cool to me. So he has all these incredible ideas and we just cannot wait to have him on repeatedly. And yeah, as Jonathan mentioned, if you were going to pick one person to have on as your in-house expert on all things technical and safe withdrawal rates, sequence of returns, Big Earn from Early Retirement Now is the person. So we are just in a really fortunate position where we can bring these people to you. So as you can tell, we're just incredibly excited.
I don't think there's anything like this has ever been done. And you know, long before we knew this was actually going to happen, I was slapping crowdsourced personal finance on our featured images for our Friday roundups. But you know why these people are willing to do this? It's because of you guys. It's because of y'all's engagement. You've shown how excited you are. You've shown how eager you are to participate. And just like Brad and I are super excited to share everything that we've learned over the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years, these guys are too. You know, they want to put it out there. And I don't think any other community wants to share their secrets as much as the FI community does. We are desperate to get this knowledge out there and have an impact in someone's life just to help without asking of anything in return. And it is just unbelievably rewarding that y'all are responding to this and that these in-house experts are willing to join us, continue to build this story about what the road less traveled looks like. And one thing I got a really big kick out of was Alan called us out. He said, guys, I love the Pillars of FI episode. I thought it was fantastic. Where was building a side hustle? And I think that is epically awesome and that he is right to hold us to account on that. And we will probably redo the Pillars of FI every single year going forward. We'll have one episode a year dedicated to it. Next year, Alan, just because of that plug, we will make sure that Side Hustles makes it into one of the pillars of FI. And we're incredibly excited that this is going
to
happen.
And we'll have the links to all these experts' websites in the show notes to today's show so you can check them out. And as always, just if you have questions, that's what makes this so interesting. Just send us your feedback at feedback@choosefi.com. Send us questions, comments, anything. That's what's making this such a vibrant community and making all these people want to be a part of it. So the more that you do, the more of these experts we can get on. So again, as always, thank you very, very much.
All right, guys, we had a travel rewards question today, and this is from Noah, who has a website at moneymetagame.com. And his question is, currently struggling with the ultimate first world FIRE problem. I have tons of miles and points from credit card sign-up bonuses with no near-term use for it. And it's really tempting just to cash them out and throw them into VTSAX. That definitely sounds like somebody in the FIRE community. I'm almost certain I'll find a better use for most of them towards travel in 2018 and beyond, but it feels so inefficient having them sit there idle, losing money to opportunity cost in the meantime. This guy's hardcore FIRE. I would not lose sleep over that. Anyways, I do think our credit card strategy will be shifting towards cashback in the short term, so at least I have that figured out. Do you have any ideas for me? Brad, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a tough one. And as Noah said, this is the ultimate first world FIRE problem. I think some people, you know, Pete from Mr. Money Mustache being probably the most notable, just don't love the travel rewards aspect, right? I mean, Jonathan, we sat there with Pete at Cam Mustache and he was very anti-travel rewards. He just wanted the cash, right?
Yeah, he wasn't feeling it.
No. So I can certainly understand Noah's point of view. I guess what I would say is you're generally only going to get 1 cent per point when you cash these things in. So like Chase Ultimate Rewards, for instance, you're going to get 1 cent per point. So 100,000 points are only worth $1,000. But in all likelihood, you can get 2 to 4 cents per point in travel value out of them. So if you transfer them to travel partners, these are Chase Ultimate Rewards we're talking about. So you can transfer them to 11 different travel partners. And I believe you can very easily get 2 to 4 cents per point. So $2,000 to $4,000. So while Noah's saying that you're losing them to opportunity costs, I do understand that. But the likelihood in a year of you, if you invested that money, the $1,000, in all likelihood, it's not going to turn into $2,000 to $4,000. So if you realistically are going to travel in the next year or two, I think probably the most prudent financial decision for me personally, and I think you can argue this, but for me personally, is to hold on to them as ultimate rewards points and then cash them in for that $2,000 to $4,000 of actual travel. Now, this is all predicated on you not just arbitrarily making up travel that you're doing just to use the points, right? So if you're doing that, then that's not a very financially wise decision. But if you're going to be taking this travel anyway, then I think your best bet is to hold on to the points.
Cool. Now, you guys, I think this is an interesting place to talk about one other play that you might have that is just so unique and different. And nobody else is talking about it other than the one and only Millionaire Educator. And he has a slightly different approach. Now, I know he does some travel rewards, but he also he loads up all the credit cards, gets all the bonuses, and then he uses the bonuses, he cashes them out, and then he uses it to fund his ESA account for his child each year. So he gets $2,000 a year, and you know, it is completely free money. He doesn't have to pay any taxes on it. And then it goes into an ESA account where it grows, you know, tax-free, and then it can be used for his child's college fund. So for those of you that have zero interest in travel rewards and you're never going to travel, but you're still interested in how you can game this thing out a little bit, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But Millionaire Educator is talking about, he does it every single year. And so $2,000 a year, you know, if you want to start working on your child's education fund, his ESA fund, this could be a really cool tip for you that you could use, even if you just want to game this thing out on the margins. And so we'll put a link to that in the show notes. It is definitely unique and innovative. I love the travel aspect so much. I like having that in my back pocket that for me, I don't think I'm probably going to do that because I have a plan for those points. But if you don't have any plans to travel and that was holding you back, but you still want to win, you can fund your child's college fund $2,000 a year, every single year with tax-free money without even breaking a sweat. So definitely put that tip in your back pocket and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And for those of you that subscribe, you're getting the link to these show notes in your email as soon as it gets released every single week. So you don't have to think about where to go to get that. And if you're not subscribed, but you want to be going forward, you can just text ChooseFI, that's one word, ChooseFI to 44222, or go to choosefi.com/subscribe.
And we do have another travel rewards question here from Satya. And the question is, I opened a Chase Sapphire Preferred card last year and earned 50,000 points. And my wife later opened it and earned 50,000 points as well. I transferred my Chase points to my wife's account. And at this point, my wife has about 110,000 Chase Ultimate Rewards points. We are planning to go to India next year and we'll fly from Chicago to India. But I am totally clueless of what to do now. Typically, Air India, Emirates, British Airways, and Etihad have flights from Chicago to India. And I was wondering, how should I plan this? Should I open a British Airways card? Seriously, I don't know how Brad does it, because when I look at those miles charts, I'm totally confused. I would appreciate if you could provide some tips on this. All right. So yeah, this is a great question. I think a lot of people, it's fairly easy sometimes to earn these points, that there's nothing too terribly complex. You know, we're opening these very targeted credit cards and they started with the Chase Sapphire Preferred, which is a great option. But actually redeeming them can be somewhat difficult sometimes, or at least a little bit overwhelming at first. So what I did was just looked at the list of airlines. And I said, Air India, what alliance is that in? So I literally just went to Google and typed in Air India Alliance. And it came up immediately saying Star Alliance. Now that I am thrilled with. That was the perfect answer, because how this works is United is one of the transfer partners of Chase Ultimate Rewards. And when I am looking for international flights, United is my first option because they have a very easy computer to use. So they have a very easy search engine to use. So if you literally just go to united.com, you just go to the main home screen and where it says book travel, you just put in your the airport you're going to. I usually click my dates are flexible. So I'm looking at essentially 1 month or really 2 months at a glance. And then you just literally click search. So what I did was we're recording this, you know, this is obviously May of 2017. I just did May of 2017 from ORD to HYD. That's the airport in India they're looking to travel to. And every single day in May, there are Saver Award Economy. There's a little legend here that just shows like this blue dash that says Saver Award Economy. And then you just literally click. And I would argue like you should just click on every single date and just see what flight options are available. Just because there might be one amazing itinerary on May the 18th that doesn't exist on May the 19th. So unfortunately, there's no more efficient way to do it than that. But this is pretty cool, just seeing that there's availability every single day this month. And it looks like, yeah, I'm looking here at just some random day on May 19th. There is a one-stop flight from Chicago to India, and it's 42,500 miles one way. Wow. So what that means is a round trip to India is 85,000 miles.
That's awesome. Okay? That is a great
answer.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And it took 2 minutes, right? So they can just click around and see what flights are available. So I think this is very plausible. I think the key clearly is just getting 170,000 United miles, basically. That's what they need to do at this point. So they have over 110,000. So they need about 60,000 more. So there are many cards like the Chase Inc. Business Preferred is an option. They could open United credit cards. That would be a very plausible option. There's both a United personal and a business card. There are other Chase Ultimate Rewards cards like the Sapphire Reserve, though that one does have a significant annual fee, which you can offset with there's a travel credit each year. So it's actually not that bad, but it is difficult to lay out over $400 in an annual fee in one fell swoop. But I think this should be very plausible for them and really pretty easy to put together. So that's definitely my first step when it comes to Ultima Rewards is just looking at United. Now, there are other options, but none of them are going to be that easy. And I definitely would avoid, since he asked specifically, should I open a British Airways card? I would definitely avoid British Airways. The ironic thing, and I know I've mentioned on previous podcasts, like on episode 9, which you can get to with choosefi.com/009. That was our main episode on travel rewards. I mentioned how much I love British Airways points. Now, there's a caveat there, which is ironically, they are terrible to use flying to and from Europe. So you think British Airways, you think London, and then from there you can go anywhere in the world. But British Airways points are actually terrible for people in North America flying to Europe or through Europe, because they clobber you with these kind of junk fees that they call fuel surcharges. So I would counsel very strongly not going the British Airways route for this particular trip. Now, British Airways points can be great actually in the US on American Airlines and Alaska Airlines. So we talked about that in depth on episode 9, but that is a great use of points. But that's what's so interesting about travel rewards is there are lots of these little details. And that's why we really do try to talk you through it on these Friday roundups and just take one or two questions every week. So I would advise everybody out there, go head over to choosefi.com/travel. That's our main page that Jonathan's put together. It has our recommended cards. It has a bunch of articles and it has that podcast. So if you're looking to get started, that's really the place to do it.
Very cool. And for those of you that are really passionate about travel rewards and you want to know everything that Brad has to teach, he's been consistently almost every single Friday roundup dropping a new little bit of knowledge on travel rewards. So if you haven't yet gone back and listened to all of our Friday roundups, I think they're entertaining. I think they're fun. I definitely think there's value there. It is kind of a live update of the show, but you know, you are going to get a little extra piece of the travel rewards puzzle with almost every single episode. So, you know, feel free to go back to the beginning. You're not too far back now, and you can just kind of roll through these things and you're going to be an expert by the end of this year. And to be honest, think about when Brad started laying out that question, how difficult it sounded, and he makes it so easy. So I benefit from his answers and I know y'all do as well. So definitely go check out those Friday roundups and you're going to get a lot of knowledge from that. All right, guys, this is an ongoing thing. And so we interact with you guys on a regular basis and we learn from you as much as you learn from us. I mean, really, Brad and I would both be honest with you about that. And we had this case study a while back. We had this problem that Kevin presented to us. And it was specifically had to do with him and his wife being in different places and his wife's background. And there was a little bit of conflict there in terms of them both being on the same page with Fi. And we gave an answer in one of our Friday roundups. And I think it was the Friday roundup for episode 18. And Kevin got back to us with some feedback and we wanted to read that today. Brad, do you want to tell us a little bit about that feedback?
Yeah, you bet. This was one of the best pieces of feedback we've received to date, which is saying a lot considering every single day we're blown away with what you guys are sending. So yeah, just to set the stage a little, Kevin had this issue where his wife came from an ultra wealthy background and he said she has a quote Ruth's Chris palate where they spend $700 a month on restaurants. And he's trying to make moves towards Fi. And I think they did it with their car and other things. But it just seemed like this was a bridge too far for his wife. And I really took a step back in that Friday roundup. And it was episode 18 roundup and wanted to ask about happiness. And I said a lot of people substitute happiness in life for buying things. And my question to Kevin was, what does your wife value and what does she get happiness and satisfaction from? What do you enjoy doing as a couple? And all these little things, find things you enjoy doing that don't cost a lot of money. So that was our challenge to Kevin, was to find out what they could do together that could substitute for these really ridiculously expensive restaurants. So Kevin shot us a Facebook message and he said, I just listened to the last Friday roundup. Thank you for all you guys do. I laughed out loud when Jonathan said I was totally screwed.
Sorry. that was my opinion. I was like, yeah, you're toast, man.
He said, I appreciate the empathy. Last night, I made an awesome Mediterranean chicken dinner to enjoy with my wife. Naan bread, hummus, rice pilaf, fresh basil and tomato slices, and a nice Pinot Noir. So I had a deep conversation with my wife about why she likes restaurants so much. It turns out it's mostly because I give her my undivided attention and really talk to her with no TV in the background or other distractions. It's so simple. And I swear, Jonathan, I had chills up and down my spine when I read that. That was the most amazing thing. I mean, this literally just changed Kevin's life.
Yeah, I know. Right? I'm feeling him right now, dude. That's how excited I get about this idea. I mean, something clicked and it seems so simple, but it clicked. And that's amazing, Kevin. We're thrilled for you. We're thrilled for your wife. We're thrilled for what this means, not only for your financial future, but also this deeper understanding you have of what motivates each other and what y'all need as you grow this relationship. So, and Fi is certainly a component of that.
Yeah. And I mean, just to really underscore this, Kevin and his wife were spending all this money every single month, $700 a month on restaurants. And the motivating factor for his wife was not that she has some expensive, you know, rich girl habits. It was nothing like that. She just wanted to spend time with Kevin. That was what she enjoyed. That was what she got satisfaction out of, right? It had nothing to do with the $100 Ruth's Chris dinners. Nothing at all. It just had to do with he was paying attention to her. Just human connection. Think about how important this is, right? I am constantly talking about happiness being at the root of these decisions and how Fi can actually help motivate us and hone us in on that happiness because we're not worried about wasting money frivolously or buying these expensive things to impress our dopey friends or our neighbors. It's about finding what you enjoy in life. And Kevin honestly took a really big leap there, right? A lot of people would not have had the courage to have that conversation, even with their own wife. And he had that conversation and she said, it's just because I want your attention. Basically crying out, put the phone down, shut the TV off, put the book away, just pay attention to me. And that literally changed his life. And I just could not be happier for them.
Wow. That's incredible. You know, one of the things I've realized by doing this show, and it goes back to what you said. I mean, you've had a lot of impact on my personal, you know, philosophy in life, especially when it comes to stuff. It is inevitable when you hang out with a pseudo minimalist, you stop being an extravagant spender. Your model is going to get moved. And I get a lot less happiness from buying stuff than I used to before I met Brad. I really do. There was a period in my life where there really were Amazon packages dropping out of the sky on my porch on a regular basis. And that was my little crack rush of the week, right? But, you know, over time that metric changes. And as your target changes, you replace that. You replace that target. And absolutely, stuff is so boring. It's so boring compared to relationships, like what we're forming on this show, like what we're doing. It's boring compared to ideas. It's boring compared to knowledge. It's boring compared to community. And there's value there. So, and the side effect is even cooler, that as you find stuff to be boring and you have more time to commit to these other things, you also get to financial independence faster. I mean, it's just, it's a function of the math, right? So this has been a really cool experience for me. It's changed my own world. It's changed the way I view stuff, you know, quote unquote. And as other people share their stories, like Kevin, what a win, man. What an absolute win. And what great advice you gave him. So much better than what I said, right? But all of that, that picture is just so beautiful. And I'm just glad to be, you know, at the perimeter of it, a part of it. It's really cool. All right, guys, for our next segment, Fire in the News. Guys, I really need to get like some cool music to go along with this, like a simple plug, like thunder dropping out of the sky, something like that for this particular segment. But the idea is the fire is spreading, my friends, and we just want to share with you when it hits. So this past week or within the last 2 weeks, Washington Post actually set something up, and I'm going to send this over to Brad, but we have ESI coming in next week to talk to us about career hacking. And he was actually featured in Business Insider and in the Washington Post. Brad, do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, this was really cool. I had read ESI from ESI Money's guest post on Budgets Are Sexy. And it was about the 10 things that surprised him about early retirement. So it was a great article. I had actually seen it on Business Insider. So I had a sense that it was going viral. But then I opened up my Washington Post and I saw an article from the nationally syndicated columnist on money, Michelle Singletary. And this was an article about ESI's post on Budgets Are Sexy. I mean, how amazing is that? That means she or someone at her paper is reading Budgets Are Sexy and saw this incredible article and she just featured it. So that was one of those things where you kind of sit back and say, as Jonathan would say, the fire is spreading. I mean, this is becoming a much more mainstream concept. So yeah, that was really, really cool. I mean, to be featured in one of the most important papers in the country and then syndicated across the country. I mean, that's the real deal.
So guys, we're going to link to that in the show notes. That is a... it's just cool. It's just someone that made all the right moves. ESI just makes the right moves and he puts the work in. I mean, you can see it. So stay tuned. This upcoming Monday, we got him on the show. And honestly, he is going to pull back the curtain and show you what it looks like to supercharge your career. And this is valuable, guys. This is your career is what you have right now. It's what you're using. And if you do a good job or if you overperform and you get, you know, raises, that is going to allow you to hit your FI goal faster. There's value there. There's value in it. Right now, you know, unless you're on the other side of FI, you have a career and you might as well game it and optimize it out just like you do every other aspect of your life. And I promise you, by the end of this episode coming up on Monday, you're going to appreciate why ESI is the guy to show you how to do it. So another fire in the news. This is from Brittany and she says, "Hi, Jonathan and Brad. I came across this article last week," and she gave us the link, which we will put in the show notes. Now, it's a little bit older. It was actually written in 2014, but it's interesting because it stated rich could be in terms of accumulated wealth instead of annual income. Now, most of us on the FI path have thought this for a long time. This is just an obvious statement. But the fire crowd was not the target audience. And she says, "I think this is the defining character trait of fire members. Net worth, which would be defined as saved assets working for you, versus an income that is blown on consumable goods and services." So she said, "My hubs and I have plenty of friends who brag about their annual salary, yet are drowning in the installment lifestyle of debt." Yeah, not that impressive. "It would be interesting to pose the idea of rich in terms of the fire mentality, time, hobbies, health, etc. These are the true indicators of wealth and richness in life." Wow, Brad, I think that is really astute. I think obviously me and you would agree with that over and over and over again. I look at myself and I earn a six-figure salary, but it requires me to be there, you know, a certain number of hours, a lot of hours. And then the time that I'm not there, I have to apply that mental energy. And I compare it to maybe someone like Justin for Root of Good that doesn't have to work. And is he earning what I am? No, his salary would be less than mine. But of the two of us, which one of us is wealthier? And not even just on a net worth perspective, but in terms of the time that you have, the freedom that you have, the flexibility that you have with your lifestyle, Justin for Root of Good has it made, you know, and I am trying to be more like him. So I completely agree with what Brittany's saying. And most of the FIRE community does, I believe.
Yeah, same here. I think it's all about net worth. And I've said this repeatedly. I talk about executives making $200,000 a year, but that goes quickly. And those people, if you're spending all your money, you are poor in my estimation, no matter what kind of income you have, no matter what expensive car you're driving or McMansion you live in, you are poor if you're living paycheck to paycheck. So it really is that simple. It just comes down to living below your means, saving money, and putting it in index funds. Then, I mean, that is the most succinct way. When we spoke with Keith from The Wealthy Accountant, which that episode will drop in a couple of weeks here, but he said his advice is save 50% of your money and invest it in Vanguard index funds. End of story. Everything from there is at the margins, but you get wealthy by doing that. So I completely agree. And thanks, Brittany, for sending this in.
You know, one thing that I think is really would be a really cool thing to do, if you guys have read Thomas Stanley's book, The Millionaire Next Door, he talks about, you know, people being an accumulator of wealth and actually ranks it that way. It's based on your savings rate, based on your age, and then it does depend on what income bracket you're in, I believe. But there's actually a calculator that you can go to online and you can enter in just those few statistics, and it can tell you whether or not you are a under average accumulator of wealth, whether you are an average accumulator of wealth, or whether or not you are a over average or really good accumulator of wealth. And I think that that is a much better metric of where your FI future is headed than just what is your annual salary, as Brad indicated. Have you ever seen that calculator, Brad?
No.
Oh, cool. All right, well, then I will get to share you the link with you as well. Hang on. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, so I've got the calculator pulled up right now. And in order to do it, you would just type in your age. And I'll share the link with you, Brad. You would type in your annual salary and income. And then you would type in your net worth. Based on those three different things, it'll tell you whether or not you are a under accumulator of wealth, whether or not you are an average accumulator of wealth, or a prodigious, which you really would like to be a prodigious accumulator of wealth. So that is a pretty good metric. But even that aside, that is just the underlying principle that then sets you up for what Brittany talked about, which is time, hobbies, health, flexibility, right? Simplicity, flexibility. That's Brad's mantra. If we were to get a t-shirt, somewhere on the t-shirt, we need to put simplicity, flexibility.
Nice.
And yeah, it's a very, very, very cool stuff. All right, guys. Now, I know some of you may be new with us. Maybe you just found us within one of the last one or two episodes, and you know that we do this Friday roundup. It's just this weekly gathering place where we get to tell you about our ideas, but more importantly, we get to incorporate your ideas. And one of the things that we're doing right now is we're capturing your frugal wins of the week and your feedback on our Facebook page and on our website. Our Facebook page you can access by going to choosefi.com/Facebook. Brad or myself usually post one or two ideas or questions each week just to really capture what's working for you guys. And this last week, you know, we asked, what is your frugal win of the week? Now, Luis, he got back to us with this FWOTW. So on Twitter, I guess that would be the hashtag. Hashtag FWOTW. I'm sure that's going to go viral. Luis sent us this and he said, moved into a new place about 6 months ago and the place came with its own fridge. This older fridge doesn't have a filter for water and it's hooked right into the tap. The tap is no bueno out here. Been thinking that I need to hack a filter into the line into the fridge. Thought it would be complicated. Once I looked into it, super easy. $40 investment savings, and it's going to save them about $40 a month on bottled water. How cool is that, Brad?
Yeah, that's a really cool one. I like that as a nice little hack there. And Amanda said, today I switched all of my retirement funds to Vanguard. I found out that I have the total stock market institutional fund available to me as an option, which reduced my expense ratio from 0.25 to 0.04. So wow. That is a heck of a frugal win.
That's a massive savings over decades. Massive savings.
And Jim actually just chimed in with one while we were recording. So luckily able to get this on the podcast.
Nice.
He said, Costco, quote, household memberships can be shared with a friend. We split our yearly membership with another family, earning ourselves a 50% savings for both families. And Jonathan, I think you do something similar to this.
Yeah, that's super cool. I actually give my other card to my mom, who's in another area of the state. And then she gives me her Sam's Club card. So I have access to both Costco and Sam's Club, essentially for the price of one membership. And then I guess she has access as well. So she maintains the one, I maintain the other. But yeah, that's a great tip that a lot of people don't think about, especially if you and your wife both have a card. Well, for me and my wife, that's like one of our little things that we do together. That's one of our routines. So we don't need two cards. So that's a great tip, Jim. So Brad, what about you? Do you have any frugal wins this week?
Yeah, I have a little one. It was actually for a couple of dinners that Laura and I cooked at home. And these were two of our favorite meals to go out to eat. So we have the opposite of Ruth's Chris palate, as we talked about before. Some of our favorite meals are going out for wings and beer and for basically burgers and beer, let's say. So, you know, pretty low key, but anytime you go out to dinner, especially when you have a beer or two, you're probably talking with the entrees and the beer and tax and tip, it's going to be $40 easily for two, very, very easily. So we actually frugal hacked both of those meals and they came out as well or better than anything we would have had out. Laura's absolutely perfected how to make buffalo wings sauce. house. So I think my mom actually picked up a bag of wings at Sam's Club. And I'll try to get a link for these if anyone's interested. But they are fantastic. We just throw them. We threw like 20 of these things into the oven for like an hour. No work at all. Just put it on a baking sheet. And Laura had the wing sauce all made up and just lathered them. And they were absolutely fantastic. And, you know, had a craft beer that we had bought for, you know, like a dollar a beer as opposed to $5 or $6 when you go out. So, I mean, we wound up doing each of these meals for less than $10 per meal, you know, for the two of us. So $20 as opposed to easily 80. And it satisfied those cravings that we had for these kind of special meals for us. And that's a big savings.
So does that make it into the top 50?
Yeah, that's a very good question. yeah, so the burgers probably wouldn't, but those wings, I think they will. I think that's nearing. We've been a little lax lately with the actual promoting and demoting things from the top 50. So.
Well, here, I know Laura listens to this every Friday, so I want access to the top 50. I want it. And our Choose FI community wants it. You guys have actually emailed me about it. So Laura, you told us you had to wait till tax season was over before we got you involved. We want a digital copy of the top 50. And trade secrets are not allowed. We share everything in the FI community.
Yeah. No pressure, sweetheart. Sorry about that.
I set them up for it. Aaron had some feedback for us on the true cost of car ownership episode. And he said, lifestyle creep is a real and dangerous thing, especially when it comes to vehicles people drive. It's rare that you see someone move down in car. And when they do, you can tell that there's been an ego hit. Jonathan, I totally agree with your statement about being able to own nicer things with a positive total cost of ownership when you buy well below market value. I have actually done this with boats for the last 5 years or so with a simple 800 number and a website. Aaron, that is not enough information. I want more. How the heck are you winning with an 800 phone number and a website? Please tell us. That is super cool. And I feel like that's a life hack we could use. So consider this us showing you that we are genuinely interested in this life hack that you figured out. And maybe there's something that the rest of us can use. As I was saying in the episode, cars are an expense. Now, I'm totally fine with the idea that a car allows you to earn more money. I get that. But at the end of the day, a car is costing you money. And essentially, the only way that you can win over a long enough period of time is you have to buy whatever it is, a boat or car or whatever, significantly below Blue Book, drive it for a period of time, probably shorter period of time, 2 to 3 years, and then sell it for significantly more than you bought it to recapture the cost of those expenses. I mean, that's the only way that it would work. Now, that's fine. I understand the math, but Aaron's saying that he has a system in place for doing this over and over again with a simple 800 phone number and a website. I want to know about that because that sounds like something I could use.
Yeah, that's very intriguing. Hopefully Aaron is listening to this and we'll send it in. So yeah, we'll see.
All right, guys, this is an ongoing thing. It's the controversy regarding my pull-ups. There's like two sides. You know how like back in the day with Twilight, it was Team Edward and Team Jacob. It's like, are 50 pull-ups impressive or stupid if they're not done the right way? And there are people that are defending me and people that are saying, no, it's a total crock. It's a joke, which is fine either way. But what we have determined is that there's going to be a pull-up competition at Camp Mustache Southeast next spring. And I have all sorts of people saying that they are in this thing to win it. Personally, the only person that I plan on beating is going to be Mr. Money Mustache. That's my number one target. So that's what I'm training for. He hasn't even said that he's going to do it yet. But if there's enough of us signed up for this, you know, he can't help but get involved. The guy's competitive. So that's what I'm going for. What about you, Brad?
Yeah, this whole thing is very funny. And this probably will be the last time we talk about pull-ups. So hopefully anybody out there who's rolling their eyes can not worry about that. But it really is very, very funny. And in fairness, I was at Jonathan's house. We were recording podcast last week and he did 17 strict form pull-ups, which is impressive for anybody. I mean, there are very, very few people, even fit people, who can do that. So, you know, any kind of joking that I made about Jonathan and his kind of 50 weird pull-ups, totally aside, he's the real deal. So I have my money on Jonathan at this pull-up competition next year.
Thank you. This is what you call vindicated. I was like, Brad, I want a second plug here. You got to come back and plug this for me. Thank you.
Yep. You are legit. The 50 pull-ups were not legit, but you are legit.
All right. Well, it's kind of like Tim Ferriss, man. When he was at some point, what did he do? He was like some sort of Muay Thai kickboxer title for a period of time in some crazy place. And what do? He looked at the rules and he found out what the rules actually said, and then he optimized it. So it was like him as this it's really a 200 pound guy that like got his weight down to like 180. And then he was fighting against some little dude that was like 120 pounds or 130 pounds. I don't know. Something crazy like that. And it was just not even, it wasn't even close. So you just said pull-ups, man. You didn't specify the rules. And so I didn't say
one tenth of a pull-up.
All right. We're done with it, guys. Pull-ups are over. Let's go ahead and move into iTunes reviews and we'll wrap this thing up. So first of all, guys, this show, we have like 140 written reviews right now, or it's something absurd and crazy for a show that's only been around for 3 months, essentially, 3 or 4 months. This show is on pace to be one of the biggest shows on iTunes within the next 2 years. I mean, it's just absurd how quickly it's grown. And I think it's because it's impacting people where they live. It's actually information that you can use every single week, and it's entertaining and relatable, which is what we've always gone for. And we're right there in this thing with you. We are learning these things. We're applying them to our lives. And I think that's really cool, as opposed to maybe the guru that's preaching at you from his, upgraded class model where he's always trying to upsize you into something else. We're just learning this stuff and enjoying it right along with you and sharing it. And I think people relate to that, which is really cool. So anyways, what we have told you for a while now is we are going to be doing this ongoing thing every single Friday for every single 5 written reviews that we get. And all you got to do to get into this drawing is actually write us a written review and then take a screenshot of it and send it to feedback@choosify.com. We will enter you in a drawing to win a copy. In this case, right now, currently, we're doing J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. Phenomenal book, and we're excited to be able to offer this for you. But today, we're going to announce 2 winners. And Brad, do you want to go ahead and draw the first one?
All right. So our first winner is Keenan. And the review says, I came across this podcast after reading a post on financialpanther.com and was immediately hooked. Brad and Jonathan are fantastic hosts that come at financial independence from different mindsets, Brad being more conservative, as well as different positions in life. Jonathan is getting rid of student debt and Brad is already fired, which provides a wide encompassing view of how financial independence affects someone. As someone who is going to be completing college in the next year, this podcast is a total game changer for my financial future. Thanks to the topics they discuss and experts that they bring in to talk with, I'm already well on my way to being financially independent by the age of 30. They really do break it down into simple habits that will not just guide you to financial independence, but an abundance of wealth. Additionally, the whole time that you're learning about how to optimize your future, you are entertained by great stories, people, and hosts. I highly recommend this podcast. And yeah, that was a really great review from Keenan. And it's amazing that he's in college and is already on this path to financial independence by 30.
No, that is super cool. And he is going to absolutely crush this thing. And the math really does work for you. And if we can get this into mainstream, if we can just plant this seed, there's nothing more powerful than an idea. This concept that, yes, you can retire at 35 if you start soon enough. You can retire at 45 if you start soon enough. And if you're already in your 30s, already in your 40s, you can still retire decades ahead of your peers if you just implement a few of the ideas that we're talking about. That idea has so much power. And for those of you that have already, you've made your decisions and you're fine with it, that idea has power for your kids. And I just like being a part of it. I love sharing it. So Keenan, thank you so much for that review. And go ahead and send us your address so that we can go ahead and get that book on out to you.
All right. So our next winner is Julia. Jonathan, you want to read this review?
Yeah, this one is super cool. In fact, Julia said, this is my first review ever. I never leave reviews, but the interview with Go Curry Cracker was just mind-blowing. And that was episode 18, guys. I read most of the 5 blogs, but never came across the idea of capital gains harvesting. This was literally life-changing. Thanks for a great podcast.
Julia, thank you so much for that review. We really appreciate it. And yeah, to everybody out there, the best way you can help us grow, the best way that you could possibly support us is just take 30 seconds, head over to iTunes, search for Choose FI, and leave a written review, even just a 1-sentence review and hopefully a 5-star rating. Or we actually set up a short link to get there. It's choosefi.com/iTunes. So yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time. It is the absolute best way that you can support us and help this community grow.
And guys, this podcast is a weekly gathering place where your voice is heard now around the world. The fire is spreading, my friends, and we'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.